This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club, because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and tonight we're going to do something just a little bit different. For those who have been watching the Besotted Twitter feed, or you've been following Besotted for the last 6 or 7 months, you would have shared in our journey to produce the Brentford Revolution book, which courses the Brentford's rise from pretty much the basement of the basement. We were at one stage looking like we were going to go out of the Football League and out of existence under Terry Butcher, to the very pinnacle, the very top of the Premier League. And that's where we sat after that Arsenal game on the first Premiership match in our history. So, you know, it has been a remarkable rise. And this book, The Brentford Revolution, it chronicles chapter and verse all the way through that journey. I wrote it with Tim Street, who's a well-respected journalist who's covered Brentford for many years. I'll introduce him in a minute. And obviously, through publishing Besotted, we've reported on every twist and turn in Brentford's history back to the 1990s. So when Matthew Benham took over, you know, there was obviously a lot of scepticism and mystery about the man, but he's played just the biggest role in the transformation of our club. So introduce around the table tonight. I'm Dave Lane, editor of Besotted, along with Bill Grant, who's still out in Qatar. I've got Tim Street with me. Hello, Tim. How are you, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
And I've got John Restall, who is Brentford season ticket holder for God knows how many years. He's been a contributor to Besotted for God knows how many years as well. And he's been one of those that's read the book, and I thought it was important to get someone who wasn't only just writing it, someone who can critique it as well.
Yeah, and I appreciate the cash bung you've given me to give it several reviews on Amazon, Dave, so
that's all right. Thank you for that. I mean, these Amazon roles are important. How are you, John, anyway?
Yeah, no, I'm very good, thank you. I'm very good. I've been enjoying the World Cup. I've been enjoying Billy reporting back from the World Cup. I'm sure we've all seen that every time we've turned on a telly or the radio. But no, very good, thank you. And actually, unplanted, I have been enjoying the book. It's been a lovely reminisce, but actually reminds you of how far we've come. I've enjoyed remembering some of those heroes we've had along the way, some of the ups and downs. So I'm sure like a lot of people who've read it or want to read it might be getting it from Santa if they've been good boys and girls. I've very much enjoyed reading it, so thank you for having me along tonight to talk about it.
Absolute pleasure. I mean, actually, that's a pretty good place to start. I mean, describe the book. I mean, you know, we've written it. We know it intimately. You describe it.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping for more pictures to guide me through it, but no, it's basically a blend of storytelling through the words of people associated with the club through that time, whether that's players, managers, supporters, mixed with, you know, the facts of what's actually gone on, a bit of opinion in there as well, but actually just telling the story of Brentford's incredible rise from, you know, the days we were, there were supporters shaking buckets outside the ground, the days we almost collapsed as a club, through to where we are now, which is a brilliantly run club, where our worst player would have been probably our best player for 8 or 10 of the seasons that we talked about in the book. So that's how I've read it, and I've enjoyed it. It's told with the good news, the big reveals at the start, so that's handy if you don't want to read the whole thing, which is the arrival in the Premier League. But yeah, it's just been a wonderful journey.
So the gestation of this book really is the promotion to the Premier League. You know, it was a little while after the brilliant day at Wembley that I was driving through London stuck in a traffic jam, and I was just itching to start writing about this journey. And you know, having published several Brentford books, mostly photo books and history books, I wanted to be the one that wrote it, and I didn't want to write it all myself. And Tim is someone that had been contributing to Besotted fairly recently, and he was the natural person to co-write it with me. He's been at the coalface every step of the way, you know, writing for the Chronicle and online websites all about Brentford. Tim, tell us a little bit more about you and your Brentford history and your journalism.
So I've been a Brentford fan since sort of roughly the early 90s. Always enjoyed writing. Done a degree in journalism, came out of that into the Middlesex Chronicle, which was somewhere I sort of targeted for doing work experience because I knew it was the Brentford paper, so it's somewhere I wanted to get a bit of a foot in. Work experience led to becoming a junior reporter there, done a few years doing that, and we had a guy called John Lyons doing the Brentford reporting there at the time. He was certainly part of the furniture, and he didn't look like he was going to leave anytime soon. So 3 years on, I'd done my seniorship and started to think, what do I do next? And then suddenly, out of the blue, John announces that he's leaving to go travelling. So I was given the sports editor role on an interim basis for a few weeks. Done all right of it, so they gave me a job full time, and that was it. Landed my dream job.
So you, I mean, so you were writing about Brentford at the time where this story starts, yeah?
Yeah. So we're talking kind of after I started writing about Brentford for the Chronicle in the sort of Martin Allen era, and it's after that that things started falling apart a bit. The first season that we really kind of focused on was ironically Brentford's worst season ever. I mean, stats bear it up. You know, I remember writing a piece on it for the Chronicle. It was statistically our worst Football League season ever, and Paul Leroy Senior, who's a lovely bloke, but was just given the worst cards to play with. And then Scott Fitzgerald relegated by Easter, and then another terrible season followed. And
can I ask a question, Tim?
Yeah.
Because like you said, this is your dream job.
Yeah.
The team that you love, you're having to write probably quite harsh words about at the time. You're having to, you know, critique those managers who are trying their best. Who are trying, you know, Leroy tried to do something different, but with the wrong set of players. How do you balance that with being a Brentford fan?
It's not easy at times. Probably a lot harder. I mean, Leroy, as I said, is a lovely bloke, and by then, everyone knew he'd been dealt a bad hand. You know, there was no money. He'd had to put together a squad from scratch. So everyone kind of, you know, and Leroy knew it as well. But under Mark Allen, for example, you know, again, great guy. But Brentford were in a much better position under him. But there were still some bad performances. You know, you've got to critique, you've got to, you know, we failed in the playoffs twice.
I can remember Martin Allen stopping a certain fanzine editor who sat around the table in the street after a critical match report of, I think it was I lost to Burnley, was it?
Yes, it was me, wasn't it?
It was you, Dave, and you got Martin's eyes, didn't you, that day in the street?
That's the first time I saw the mad dog stare, yeah.
I could be quite intense, couldn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, so writing about Brentford being not very good, I mean, being absolutely awful, is something that the modern day journalists haven't got a right about. Yes, we lose games still, but we're losing games against the best teams in the land. We're not losing against Rochdale and Gillingham. You know, I'm not knocking those because they're...
We did lose it against Gillingham.
Well, some things never change. But, we were losing regularly at home, you know, three or fours on the spin, you know, in the basement. They were hard times. But, you know, that's just kind of the contrast between now and then. You know, never in our wildest dreams would we have ever dared to actually think it was possible that we would be in the top flight. You know, obviously that's something we always wished could happen, but never ever did we really think it was possible. You know, so again, you know, this is why this book, in my opinion, had to be written, and had to be written by people that I knew had been there all the way through it, because it's impossible. It's almost like a joke, isn't it? You know, we referenced that match at Peterborough where we lost 7-0.
Simon Brown sent off after 2 minutes. Yeah, that's the one.
You know, that's probably like the ultimate contrast in the book.
If I'm right, wasn't there a goal where the Peterborough player dropped to his knees and headed the ball over the line?
That wasn't in that game. That was another miserable defeat at London Road. We lost 5-1 one year, and it was Andy Clark, former Wimbledon striker, got down on his knees.
Again, they all blur, don't they, unfortunately?
Yeah. But you're right, I mean, that 7-0 was probably the zenith of our poorness, wasn't it? I mean, there are worse games, you know, losing at home to Dagenham and Redbridge, and then the Morecambe and Grimsby games back to back that done for Butcher. But when you look back, it really is that 7-0.
I can remember my lowest point as a fan was when a player we all liked at the time, John Massino, it was probably it was post Martin, and we were in a cup game. I think it might have been the goal where it might have been Doncaster, and the ball went through the net from McCammon and it didn't count. And
yes,
they actually had a
ghost goal.
And we had a corner, like we hadn't been out of a half, we had a corner, and the ball dropped to Massino at the edge of the box, and everyone shouted, shoot, but he managed to control it away from goal, chase after it, volley it in the air to avoid another tackle, and we ended up giving a throw-in on the edge of our own box from a corner, and it was the player that was meant to be our hope at that point who'd done it, and it sort of summed that low point up for me, really.
Was that not Matthias Jensen's fault?
I think, obviously, it has later transpired that it was Jensen's fault. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I say again, you know, we can't talk about the great times, you know, the Man United 4-0 win, which is probably where the book kind of finishes up. We include, you know, Ivan Toney being called up to the England squad. We know how that panned out, and he didn't make it to the World Cup, but him actually being called up as a Brentford player was an incredible moment. So that and the Man United 4-0 win this season is where the book kind of ends, but we go every step along the way.
And it's mad, isn't it? Because I remember speaking to you the day after we beat Man United 4-0, and we said, this is where we've got to finish the book, because that is the zenith. That is the peak of where this is going. And then, you know, a few months later, we're beating Man City on their own turf, and you just think, no, this isn't the peak, this is going to keep going and going until, you know, until we do
something.
We're
going to win the World Cup!
Yeah, well, spoiler alert, the final chapter is like we win the European Cup under Ian Holloway as our manager.
You know what, we might laugh about it, but I think European football was one of the things sort of mentioned and thrown about in the last chapter, wasn't it, by the likes of Phil Giles and John Varney, and it's something that's just not out of question, is it?
You know, no.
I mean, we're not talking Champions League, but, you know,
yeah.
UEFA Cup,
European Conference, Europa League.
Yeah, I mean, you can get into these competitions now by finishing as low down as 7th and 8th, can't you? So that is not beyond the realms of possibility at all.
No, and that, I mean, we spoke, you know, later on in the book, we were fortunate to have access to Phil Giles, Rasmus Ankersen, and Thomas Frank, and John Varney as well. So they speak about the future of the club. You know, this isn't, as Tim said, this isn't where the Brentford story ends. Hopefully, this is just kind of like a holding pattern while we regroup, get used to our salubrious surroundings, and kind of be able to kick on again. And we've seen some of the incredible transfer fees that we've been paying, especially in the summer just gone. But that doesn't seem to be ending either. Not that, you know, I'm privy to anything that might happen this January window, but Phil Giles talks a lot about, you know, this they're not fazed by it. I think as fans we are a little bit still. We're still getting used to, you know, little old Brentford being here. For them, you know, for John Varney, for Thomas Frank, and for, you know, Rasmus and Phil, and you know, Matt Benham himself, they're high end professional people. They're not kind of like pinching themselves every morning and going, oh my God, I can't believe we're here. They're already planning for that next phase, and that comes across loud and clear in the book as well, doesn't it, Tim?
Not only that, but it's evident of the whole culture that you see throughout the book, and it's evident when you speak to guys like Raz, like Phil, like John Varney, like Matthew. You know, it's when things go wrong, it's cool, calm, collected. No worries. And when things are going brilliantly, you know, beating Man United 4-0, beating Man City on our own patch, again, you know, it'll be like, yeah, well, you know, let's not get overboard about this. It's just part of, it's what we do. It's a natural progression of what we do.
Yeah, this certainly, that comes across loud and clear. I mean, obviously, I know some of the people through, you know, through the years of doing the fanzine, the podcast. We've had access and done interviews with them, so I've become familiar with the way they are. But there's always been a kind of a humble confidence where they're good people doing great work, and it's very much the Brentford way. And I think that's something that comes across throughout. You know, it's not been success after success after success. Of course, we've been growing every year. We've been improving our position or getting stronger. Or
it didn't always feel like that, though, did it? It felt sometimes like two steps forward and one step back. There were and I know,
but that's still one step forward.
Well, that is still one step forward. But when you're doing, sometimes we did the one step back first. I think as supporters, one of the things we've really had to come to terms with, which is really hard to come to terms with, is selling your best player. And if as a club we hadn't have done that, if we hadn't have sold players at our perceived peak, and a lot of them we did sell at a peak, we wouldn't be where we are now. And the way I tried to justify it to myself was that, like, we were lucky to see Ollie Watkins for 2 years or whatever, because we didn't have him, we'd have had a journeyman in previous seasons. So actually trying to enjoy the players while they're with us, which is a really hard thing to think about. But actually the richness of the players, and in a few minutes, if it's all right, I want to go through some of the players, the years we've had through the duration of the book, because you can see that progression of players. But the that's a hard thing as a fan to take. And I think there are still elements of our support who find it really hard when we're talking about selling players. The reality is, some of the players we have in our team at the moment will be wanted by clubs with bigger resources and bigger finances than ourselves. And that's hard to take. It's hard to even think about now. We didn't really sell any players this summer that we really wanted to keep. Eriksen left, but he wasn't asked to keep. But beyond that, we didn't really let any of the cream go. Yeah. And at some point, someone's going to come in for one of our players, but we have to learn to stop again.
And it's very much, you know, again, that comes through loud and clear in the book, doesn't it, Tim? It's an education. It's been an education and a journey for all of us. And sometimes it hasn't been easy to see that the events are necessarily for the better.
Yeah, it also shows the progression of the club's philosophy. I mean, John was talking about selling your best players. Back in the day, we would sell the likes of DJ Campbell and Nicky Forster in a January transfer window and completely mess up our promotion campaigns as a result. And it'd be like, oh, same old Brentford. Now we're selling, although the last few years, we sell our best players, and you would see why we're doing it. You know, you would see the money reinvested into not necessarily better players, but bargain players and players that would take us to the next level. And sometimes it would be better players as well. And they're the players that have taken us to where we are now. Not only that, but whereas a lot, you know, Bessem, Nicky and DJ, great players, but, you know, we'd be selling players now that are going on to become England internationals, Premier League stars. You know, that shows how far we've come.
And something that I it jumps out, something that Phil Giles said to me when I asked him. It was towards the back end of the interview I did with him. I said, when do you think we'll start noticing that when we now we're spending £20 million on players, that they are incredibly, they're much, much more an improvement on what we had before? And he said, you might not. And I said, well, what do you mean we might not? He went, well, we sold Ollie Watkins and Saeed Benrahma, they're £30 million players. We already had £30 million players. To get players as good as them, we're going to have to spend 30 million quid or more. So, you know, it's, again, hearing it explained, I know some people, you know, it's obvious, but I think there's always a temptation that, you know, a player's ability is always linked to their value and what we pay for them. And that's not always the case, you know. We may not be, you know, unearthing Vitaly Janelt £500,000 gems anymore. We might be paying a lot more for that, but that's just like, that's just goes with the territory, doesn't it, John?
Yeah, I think that's the point. And this is maybe a beautiful segue into my story of the players. Because for me as a fan, someone described being a football fan as remembering moments of joy, and I think that's the point. I don't remember whole seasons. I don't sometimes remember the weekend before. I try and blank it out. But you remember some wins, some moments in a season, some moments on a pitch. But you definitely remember those players who've stood out along the way. So I went back and looked at our Player of the Year for the last sort of 14 years or so, from around the time of the start of the book. And it's really interesting to see the progression there. So we go back to 2008, 2009 into 2010, and our two players of the year were Sam Wood, followed by Leon Legg. And they were players who we really plucked from non-league, from Bromley, from Tunbridge Angels, who were very much those players you wanted to see come in and do well. But Legg in particular was quite agricultural, right? And I can remember when we sold him, there were some supporters who were up in arms. But it's because we needed to move to playing football from the back.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we literally, you know, we metamorphosized into every step of the way.
And that's it. And that continues. So as you roll through the next set of players, the next one's Richard Lee. Richard probably was in there because of somebody's, we had a good cup run that season. I can remember his debut was at a friendly loss against Fulham. Ooh, 5-0, where
5-0, wasn't it? Yeah.
By his own admission, he wasn't fully fit, but yeah. You know, he went on to become a hero. We then move into slightly more assured players.
Actually, Richard Lee is someone that plays a central role in this book, doesn't he, Tim? You spoke to him and he speaks at length about his role and his time at the club, and he reflects on how far we've come.
He does, yeah. I like Richard Lee's outlook on life. He's quite philosophical. He likes to think about things deeply, and he does give some quite interesting insights into the kind of era, not only that he played in, but also the era we're in now, and how he uses it in his current coaching capacity.
So Richard really was sort of a rags to riches in one season, and then the next three players I've kind of clustered together from 11 to 14. First of all, you've got Jonathan Douglas, followed by Clayton Donaldson, and then Alan McCormack. Now, Douglas and McCormack were both players we'd taken from Swindon, and we'd been neck and neck with Swindon until the playoff. I don't know if you remember the playoff game in the heat at Griffin Park. I think it's probably the closest I came to Philly. I was about to die within 120 minutes. It was sweltering hot. It was packed. Like my heart was beating at 120 miles an hour.
That was post-Trotter, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, Tony Craig stepped up to take a pen.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123.
They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
No, it scored. But that was when we just started taking maybe some better players from other clubs. Donaldson perhaps was the first of those gems we unearthed, actually. A player maybe not quite as fancied elsewhere, who turned into a hero here. And then the next player is another player we kind of plucked from obscurity, Tomani Diagaraga. You know, the heartbeat of our midfield. And he'd been out on loan at Portsmouth as we got promoted the year before. And then suddenly we're winning games in the Championship with him at the heart of our midfield, which was amazing, I thought. And then we hit a really weird one, because we hit Alan Judge. And I think Brentford stalled at this point. And the reason I think we stalled was because we became utterly reliant on one player. The entire tactic appeared to be get it to Judgey, hope for the best, see what happens. And he was a brilliant player for us, and one, again, we would have actually sold for a lot of money, but unfortunately had that really bad injury, which was a shame for him and a shame for us.
And to be fair to Judgey, at that time, we didn't necessarily have the quality of players around him that we'd had in the previous year or two.
But for me, this was where the new Brentford began, because we all thought we were doomed when Judgey would go. But actually, without Alan Judge, we arguably were a better team, because we played as a team.
Start to play as a team rather than, as you say, relying on that.
And I think over the years, we've learned as Hogan moved into
Viva. Yeah, we saw that with Hogan as well. Though,
exactly. And actually, we became better. 16-17 player of the year is really interesting, because it's Harley Dean. And Harley was a young player. Again, we took a young player who hadn't maybe made it a Premier League club. And Harley, obviously, when he went to Birmingham, and he made a lot money for the club, which helped us buy better players. He's much maligned because of the 10 times better comment, but actually Harley was a good player for Brentford, and he really cared, and I think sometimes that's good. With how we look back, Harley Dean was a vital part of our journey. The next player is Ryan Woods. He's maybe the nearest throwback to an old era in this more modern list. He was a hard-working player with a bit of creativity at his heart. We all loved his work rate, but his ability. But then suddenly, this is where you see the real step up in quality. So 18-19 is Neil Maupay. Again, a player signed from second tier football in France, but he went on to be an amazing goal scorer for us. He's still playing in the Premier League. How do you replace Neil? Well, you replace him with Saïd Benrahma, arguably the most skillful player still to this day, actually, to have played for us. We've got some brilliantly talented players. Everyone can have this argument down the pub themselves, but for me, Saïd was the first player we had who could probably beat two players from a standing start. And then after him and the promotion season, Watkins had gone, Saïd had gone, what do? We sign Ivan Toney, this wonderful, assured goal scorer who remains to this day talismanic for us. Obviously, we don't know what's going on with Ivan with the betting investigation, but in his last game for us before this interview, he scored two goals at Manchester City. So that's the journey, Sam Wood to Ivan Toney in several seasons.
And, that demonstrates the evolution perfectly, but running alongside that is the improvement in our coaching staff and the recruitment. We start the journey, as Tim said, back with Leroy Rosinha and Terry Butcher, but from the interviews that within the book, we speak to Andy Scott at great length. We speak to Uwe Rosler, which was an incredible interview. We both sat on and Zoom called him in Mallorca, and he spoke for a long, long time about coming to the club, stamping his an ethos, being in control of signings before Matthew Benham decided to start using stats more. What blew me away, and I never thought we would get this interview, was Mark Warburton. He gave us a fresh hour and a half where he spoke really openly and honestly. He speaks of regret, and he speaks of if things were different, but it's an incredible listen, and it's an incredible read that we've been able to use new words within that. Dean Smith. We've got extensive interview footage from him, and then Thomas Frank. And Marinus Dijkhuizen didn't go so well. He was there for 2 seconds, but Thomas Frank is someone we sat down with at the training ground last summer in the heat. A bit different to how it is out there now, but Thomas Very Frank funny. He spoke and he gave us a real insight into that, as I said, you know, the evolution
for me. I mean, they're all great people to speak to. For me, Andy Scott was probably the most interesting because he's someone that's been there the whole way through at different stages. Of course, he started out as a Brentford player, although that was before the sort of timeline that we're dealing with. He was there as manager when we really started to build again after that terrible time under Rossini, Fitzgerald, Butcher and so on. Got us promoted, and then he came back a few years later as I think first chief scout and then head of recruitment. And by that time, you know, this is only probably about 4 years later after he had left as manager, but by this time we were a different club altogether, a different proposition, a different culture, different philosophy. And it was so interesting to hear him speak about the difference, how far the club had already come in, you know, 4 or 5 years. And Andy stayed with us for another few years, and then of course at the end of our journey he was there again, you know, in the opposition dugout in the playoffs, not only when we knocked out Swansea in the semi-finals, but when we beat them in the final as well. And although he was with Swansea then, he was so pleased to see us finally make it. You could tell from what he was saying, and hearing him talk about the journey as a whole and how much it had changed over the years at Brentford was amazing stuff.
It is really great to have him part of this. You know, equally, I mean, this is a bit of a negative, but I think it was something I found remarkable when putting the book together. It was a quote that came to us very late from Mark Chapman, who was Bees United a board member for a couple of seasons, and he was at Dagenham and Redbridge the night that it was decided that Andy Scott was going to be sacked, basically. And he was standing next to Scott when his phone went, and it was Matthew Benham, and he was being summoned in the next day to be given his marching orders. You know, the quote in the book is, you know, Mark wasn't comfortable at all with that, because he witnessed firsthand that, you know, someone was about to be given their sandwiches wrapped up in a roadmap, and you know, at that time it was unsure where the next step was for Andy Scott, who you know, to his eternal credit, was the player and a manager that won titles with Brentford. But he started off, he got us back out of that basement, which was critical. Later on, you know, promotions under Mark Warburton, and Uwe Rosler talks about it being his team that were promoted out of League One, and then obviously it was Thomas Frank was the one that actually got us over the line to the promised land. You know, it's been a never end. It's been it really is pinch yourself stuff. Some of this journey.
John. Yeah, I don't know. There are a couple of bits as I read through the book that have. So I was very impressed actually by how Warburton spoke. I thought that was very eloquent, and he's very respectful towards the club. The Rosler bit is interesting because Rosler was a handbrake manager. We'd get a goal ahead, and he put the handbrake on, and we did have a good run just before he went. But Warburton got us up by playing good attacking football, and by not putting the handbrake on. And sometimes we lost 3-0 because we were wide open. But do you know what? We won a lot of games by a lot of goals. So whatever subsequently happened with Mark Warburton and Matthew Benham and the club, that was very sad. You know, his period of management, you have to look back at as being a really enjoyable part of the ride.
We cover the Mark Warburton era and the departure a lot. It would be wrong to have glossed over that, because it was a divisive time for fans. You know, some people thought it was just the way, I just couldn't see how we could move forward beyond that point. And you know, it was a fact that that Matthew Benham was painted as a devil, really, and he was untrusted, and his motives for the decision were really, really sort of like ripped apart. And it's only been fairly recently that, you know, it couldn't have been proved to be any more of the right decision. Tim, speaking to to Mark Warburton about that time, and looking back at that era, it's still quite contentious. It's still quite raw for some people.
Yeah, I think it took until we got promoted to the Premier League for some supporters to still not be saying we should never have sacked Warburton. But I think it was important to speak to him. I think he got his side across. I think we got both sides across. And as you say, he came across really honestly. He still spoke very respectfully of Brentford and of Matthew. He revealed that they sort of still have a kind of contact to an extent. You know, I think he said, I think they exchanged text messages respectfully after Brentford got promoted. And it's nice to see that, you know, clearly their relationship will never be what it once was, but it's nice to see there's a bit of respect there now and a bit of thankfulness for what each of them done for each other.
And it was interesting as well, it was fascinating, because we spoke to Rasmus Ankersen, who was one of the co-directors of football for several years. We spoke to him just after he'd left to go to Southampton, so it wasn't like the gloves were off, and he was able to, you know, he's always a very open, very intelligent man anyway. He never says anything he doesn't want to say. Hearing him speak about that time, and also hearing Ted Knutson talk about that on his podcast, and he gave some of the background to the signings that happened after that, and Phil Giles talks about that summer where, you know, we were signing anyone and anyone, everyone and anyone. Lot too many foreign players came in. It was very difficult for any cohesion, any kind of, they couldn't hit the ground running, because there was just too many wheels spinning, you know. There was too much change, but, you know, we cover that a lot as well, you know. So it's not all about, you know, green tick, and just having success all the way. You know, we do cover, it is warts and all, but of course we're moving in the right direction. You know, not to wrap this up, but, you know, going back to the book specifically, John, what's surprised you? I mean, obviously you know the story inside out already, but there's still a lot to learn, is there not?
Oh no, I'm still surprised that we've been promoted and won some playoff finals and things along the way. That's not the Brentford way, is it? It's quite the opposite. I think I was surprised by how quick the journey is, because we're not talking like, you know, we didn't go up consecutive seasons, clearly, and we sort of hung around probably a little bit in the Championship when we were one of the better teams, we didn't quite make it. But actually, as I say, we were on the brink of going out of business. We're now one of the better run Premier League football teams, and we play, you know, within the remit of the resources available, attacking football against Manchester City. We've just won the last game we played in the Premier League at Manchester City by attacking them in extra time, where other teams would have purely hunkered in. Yep. So that change in our ethos. I've watched a load of awful football over the years. I think, like many people, I just turned up to see my mates, really, and occasionally cheer a goal. And again, looking back through the years, you've got all the highs, but you've got the, you know, the 4-0 Pitchgate defeat at Griffin Park. You've got that win where we were 2-0 up at QPR and we drew 2-2, and you've got all of these moments of sadness, but then you've got these real explosions of joy, and they can be really important moments, like winning a playoff, or it can be Philip Hoffman scoring a deflected 90th minute winner against Forest in a game where we were down to 10 men. But they provide these explosions of joy, and I think for me that's what I enjoyed most about the book, is remembering all those happy moments and how brilliant actually the last 10 to 12 years have been as a Brentford fan.
Tim, tell us what's been the biggest surprise to you, or what's given you the most pleasure while putting the book together?
You mentioned that Raz interview, actually. That was perfect timing, wasn't it? Because it was, I think, 2 days after we'd beaten Southampton 3-0. So I think we've done well to get a couple of hours of his time and for him to speak so eloquently to us for a couple of hours. So, yeah, I mean that was brilliant. I mentioned Andy Scott. I quite enjoyed speaking to a lot of the people from that era. You know, we mentioned all the managers, but we speak to quite a lot of players from that era as well. guys like Marcus Bean, Sam Saunders, Charlie McDonald, you know, real kind of club legends. And I find it particularly interesting speaking to guys like Bean, Owen, Saunders, who have come back to the club now in different capacities. I think both of them are working with the B team and recruitment in some capacity, and hearing them talk about the difference from when they were players at the start of our journey to what to the club they're working at now, and that just brings it home to you. You know, we sort of almost get a bit blasé now. Like, oh, we're just beating another Premier League team, and you know, it's kind of getting a bit like you almost take it for granted now. But then you look back to where we came from, where we had Beano and Saunders and Richard Lee playing for us, and you can't help thinking, wow.
I love being able to sit down with Rico Henry and Sergio Canos and Thomas Frank at the training ground back in July, I think it was, and just realising that what elite athletes and elite players they are and personalities, but it's just still the perfect fit for Brentford. We are changing, we are evolving, and we're not the Brentford we were, but we're not a million miles removed from that. And listening to John Varney explain that, you know, that is still within the club's DNA, is to do things. You know, Cliff Graham famously said once, you know, money is not our God. It may be more of our, we may worship money a little bit more than we ever used to. And, you know, with £170 million coming our way, it's hard really not to, you know, be a slightly more obsessed with how much players cost, how much players are going to come in, you know, and our survival isn't necessarily linked anymore to the players that go. But maybe still, that's part of, you know, the Brentford way. That might change, we'll see in the coming years. But, you know, I'm just delighted that it was us that put the book together. I'm delighted with how it's come out. I'm delighted with how it's being received. The book's now available in the Brentford Club shop, if that's where you would like to buy it. It's available on Amazon. It's available through the Legends Publishing website. So if you haven't got it already, please do. If you haven't got a Christmas present yet, if you haven't asked Santa for anything, make sure you don't get a pair of socks. Make sure you ask Auntie Ethel to get you the Brentford Revolution book. And I hope you enjoy reading it as much as we enjoy putting it together. John?
I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but I particularly enjoyed something that happened in November 2014, which is when, in the last minute, Potter scored against Fulham.
Oh, yes.
And that made me very, very happy. And reading about it again in the book
made me very, very happy. Did you wee yourself?
Well, I was in bed at the time, so I have pads, so it's fine. It doesn't really matter.
That whole period was something else, wasn't it? That kind of November time, November 2014, not 2004. When it became clear that we weren't going to be all sore hands in the Championship, we weren't going to be struggling. I think Derby at home, when we beat him in the last minute through Stuart Dallas, was the turning point for me. We went on that brilliant run through November, and we were playing some probably the best football in the Championship at that point as well, and that was just dreamland at that time.
Alex Pritchard was players player that year as a run up to Diagaraga, and at that time was probably again
amazing. Pritchard, Judgey, Dallas, Gray,
fabulous.
And weirdly, in almost a perverse way, I actually really enjoyed reading back the report that I wrote after we lost to Doncaster. Where we should have been celebrating, where we should have been celebrating promotion and doing a pitch invasion, there was a giant police horse having a giant pee on the centre circle. And where, you know, if Trotter had scored that goal, we would have gone up. And, you know, it was just the most twisted set of circumstances and events that followed that, where the ball cannoned off the bar and went up the other end, and they scored and they went up as champions. And, you know, it was just odd. But without that moment, I don't think we would have appreciated fully what came next. And equally, the playoff defeat at Wembley against Fulham, you know, they'll never stop banging on about that. But I just think everything for a reason. And you know, I think it made that Swansea promotion at Wembley all the sweeter. And I think we're equipped now, and we're equipped to grow now.
And one of my favourite insights came from around that time. After Trottergate, Donnygate, we signed Alan McCormack that summer, you might remember. And he said, when he came into the club, he said, you know, sometimes after clubs lose a playoff final, all the heartache that comes with it, you know, they struggle the next season, maybe end up battling relegation. But he said he came into the club and straight away he saw a club that was determined to put it straight behind them and just keep building, keep progressing. And he said, although he'd left by the time of the Fulham playoff final, he said it was exactly the same afterwards. We put that final heartache straight behind us, straight away, no mucking about. That's done, it's dusted. Next season, we're going to do it. And it happened both times.
And I liked your point about twists, Dave, because the whole twist with Warburton was allegedly around us trying to bring in players like Juricin. Juricin wasn't a great success at Brentford, but my God, in October 15 or whenever it was, when he scored that goal against QPR, and that was the first time we'd beaten QPR in my lifetime.
60 years,
right? I'm not that old, Tim. Thanks. but that made me so happy. So again, just those moments of joy that you remember. Like, Jersey was worth signing just for that goal, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I hope you've enjoyed listening to our little book review, and I hope you enjoy reading the book as well. It's something we're immensely proud of, and it's something I'm going to sit down over Christmas break and actually reread, because when you put together a book, you very rarely kind of get the luxury of sitting down and reading it all when you're not trying to correct spelling mistakes or you're not trying to, you know, fine tune it. You know, I'm actually going to sit and enjoy it.
And if you do find any mistakes, don't write in.
Yeah, we really don't really want to know.
Send all your complaints to the Dutchman, Martin Holland, who I believe proofread it.
So, once again, thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, if you like our podcast, subscribe on Acast or on Apple or on Google. We'll be back hopefully soon with football to talk about, like real live Brentford matches. We're back on Boxing Day for Tottenham, our next game. All the Danes have returned back or will be returning back from the World Cup.
Sam's back.
Unscathed, yeah. The Iranians back. We just need David Raya to come back fit and healthy, and all will be good in the world. So, yeah, thanks again for listening. Don't forget to buy the book, legendspublishing.net, Brentford Football Club's club shop, or from Amazon. Take care.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.